From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now locked into WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, on this Wednesday, October 5th, 2016. That's right, it is hump day, folks. After you get off the hump, I should say, you got two more days until the weekend. This week is already flying by. We've got a ton to get to on today's show, as we will talk about the Detroit Tigers deciding to bring back Tigers manager Brad Ausmus. Yes, that news broke this morning. We will also talk about a troubled boxer who is having just all sorts of problems. He is at really one of the big names in the sport of boxing, Tyson Fury, folks. An interesting article done by Rolling Stone magazine. We'll bring that story to you, and we'll also have a very cool feature, a must-listen feature by our very own Scott Pohl, as he got the chance to chat with the wife of Hall of Famer, Basketball Hall of Famer, Irvin Magic Johnson. That's right, Cookie Johnson, who has a new book entitled Believing in Magic, My Story of Love, Overcoming Adversity, and Keeping the Faith. You don't want to miss that interview, folks. It's a great one, trust me. And on the back end of the show, we'll talk about the Detroit Lions and also a certain prima donna wide receiver who has been having all sorts of problems with the New York Giants. All of that and so much more. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Let's start this party like we always do. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners. All right, and during this version of our Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners, we will be also inviting Current Sports Production Assistant Mr. Kamen Kessler to the show. But until then, let me start this thing off with Brad Ausmus. That's right, after failing to make the playoffs for a second year in a row, the Detroit Tigers have decided to bring back manager Brad Ausmus for at least one more year. According to a person with knowledge of the situation, the team will exercise the fourth-year contract option for Ausmus. After finishing last in the AL Central in 2015, Ausmus led the Tigers to a 86-75 record in his third year. Finished 2.5 games out of a wild card spot. GM Al Avila has been impressed by Ausmus' ability to handle the young players in the organization, as well as keeping the team competitive this year despite a rash of injuries to key players. We will have more on that story in just a sec. The hometown Lansing Lugnuts have reached a two-year extension with the Toronto Blue Jays to continue their player development contract through the 2018 year. The Lugnuts have been the single-A affiliate for the Blue Jays since 2005, hosting top Blue Jays prospects on their way to the big leagues. Such names include Detroit Tigers pitchers Daniel Norris and Matt Boyd, Mets pitcher Noah Syndergaard, and Blue Jays pitcher Aaron Sanchez. Overall, the Luggies have produced 36 major leaguers since becoming the affiliate for the Blue Jays. The first wild card game of the MLB playoffs proved to be an exciting one last night, as the Toronto Blue Jays needed an extra innings to top the Baltimore Orioles by a score of 5-2. Blue Jays first baseman Edwin Encarnacion, he launched a walk-off three-run home run in the bottom of the 11th inning to send Toronto onto the ALDS to face the Texas Rangers.
Fly ball deep left field. Yes, sir, the Blue Jays are going to Texas. Edwin Encarnacion has won it for the Blue Jays 5-2 with a dramatic 11th inning home run into the 200 level here.
All right, Orioles manager Buck Showalter is facing his fair share of criticism following his team's season-ending loss. Showalter chose not to bring in his best bullpen arm in Zach Britton, who was perfect in all 47 of his save attempts this year and is a candidate for the AL Cy Young Award. Some are even calling it a fireable offense for the Orioles skipper. We now invite Kamen Kesler to keep this train moving. Kamen, what you got?
The Lions claim Bryant and sign Harbor. The 1-3 Lions made some changes yesterday, signing former Patriots tight end Clay Harbor and defensive end Armani Bryant off waivers from the Cleveland Browns. In corresponding moves, the Lions released tight end Orson Charles and placed defensive end Walson Gilbury on the injured reserve. Harbor appeared in 3 games with the Patriots this season before being released and spent the last 6 seasons splitting time between the Jaguars and Eagles. Bryant played 3 years with the Browns and made 2 starts with the team last season. Staying in Detroit, Detroit Lions linebacker DeAndre Levy is working with Detroit's Enough Said program to raise money to test more than 11,000 forgotten and unopened rape kits. Detroit's Enough Said stands for Enough Sexual Assault in Detroit. Levy has partnered with them to start his limited-time-only clothing line, Our Issue, which will be sold through Division Street Boutique. The proceeds will benefit the program as they work to test rape kits as part of the Domestic Violence Awareness Month. And the Wings finally fell in regulation in the preseason. In their 5th game of the preseason action, the Detroit Red Wings got trounced 6-1 by the Chicago Blackhawks last night. Jimmy Howard was in net for all 6 Blackhawk goals, finishing with 26 saves on 32 shots.
We talk about it all the time. And, that's where to go if you want to score.
Louis-Marc Aubry scored the lone goal for the Red Wings on the night as Detroit fell to 3-1-1 in the preseason. They'll look to bounce back tonight as they take on Pittsburgh, the reigning Stanley Cup champions.
All right, thanks a lot, Kamen. The number 21 Michigan State men's soccer team is set to take on Western Michigan at DeMartin Stadium this afternoon at 4 p.m. The Spartans have won 6 of their last 7, with that only loss coming against number 1-ranked Maryland. Western is 8-2-1 on the year. They have 6 shutouts in their 11 games so far this year. After their win over Ohio State on Sunday, the Spartans improved to 7-2 and have received some big honors this week. As we mentioned on yesterday's show, redshirt sophomore goalkeeper Jimmy Haig was named the Big Ten Defensive Player of the Week after shutting out both Bowling Green and OSU last week. And freshman forward Ryan Sierakowski was named to the College Soccer New National Team of the Week. Again, MSU and Broncos this afternoon at 4 p.m. It's a beautiful day. Go out and enjoy some soccer. And Michigan State's annual celebration to start the 2016-17 basketball season, Midnight Madness, yes, will take place at the Breslin next week, Friday, October 14th. Admission is totally free. Doors will open at 8:30 p.m., festivities beginning at 9:30. Some of the activities include scrimmages by both the men and women's teams. And as always, an appearance by a dressed-up Tom Izzo. Who knows what Coach Iz will pull out his bag this year. Reggie Jackson.
Reggie from way downtown drains it. Reggie with 39. It's a playoff-clinching victory for the Pistons.
Yeah, folks, Reggie Jackson, reports are coming out with fears that Pistons starting point guard Reggie will be out an extended period of time. No time to as to when he returned to the hardwood, but he is said to have knee tendonitis. The Pistons have 3 backup point guards in Ish Smith, Lorenzo Brown, and former U of D star Ray McCollum, but will also search for help at that position on the open market. Get well, Reggie. Those are your current sports quick hit headliners. Our phone lines are open. 517-355-WKAR. That's 517-355-9527. You can also join us via social media at facebook.com/currentsports or even tweet us at Al Martin WKAR or at WKAR_sports. Let's get right to it. We'll be right back.
goes back and has room. And somebody threw something out of the stands.
It's a bottle of water someone threw at the same time he was trying to make that catch. Inexcusable.
We thought this was a bottle of water. It looks like a can. As Kim settled back to make that play on the warning track.
What's up, good people? It is Wednesday, October 5th. Really hope you guys are having a great week out there. It is a beautiful day outdoors. I mean, if you can, please get out the house, get out the apartment, and enjoy today because we don't have many days like this left. I tell you that, folks, because I looked at next week's forecast. Looks like in the 50s, lower 60s. It should nip at 80 today, according to today's forecast. So get out and about. I mentioned the MSU men's soccer team in action against Western at 4 p.m. I know many of you guys may, if you worked a 9-to-5 shift, you may still be at work. But if you can get out right after you clock out at 5, definitely head over to MSU's campus and check out Damon Rensing's team against an in-state rival in the Broncos. That should be fun. But just get out about it, even if just walking the dog, all right? Just get out the house and do something, okay? And if you plan on going outdoors and enjoying the weather, of course, do it after you listen to Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870. What you just heard was, of course, last night's American League wild card matchup between the Toronto Blue Jays and the Baltimore Orioles. A weird moment. The final out in the seventh inning, Hyun-Soo Kim. He's the man that caught the final out, but there was a bit of a controversy surrounded around that final out because as Kim settled underneath a fly ball off the bat of Melvin Upton Jr., all of a sudden you see what I thought was a bottle of water fly out of the stands. But no, it was actually a beer can, folks. Yeah, a beer can. And then you saw Baltimore center fielder Adam Jones just irate, angrily pointing into the stands and yelling into the crowd. Just a crazy atmosphere, right? Jones said this, quote, "Someone threw a beer down at my player. That's about as pathetic as it gets between the lines. You don't do that. I don't care how passionate you think you are. Yell, cuss, scream, tell us we're horrible. We get that. We're the opposition. We completely understand that. To throw something at a player, that's as pathetic as it gets," end quote. And I totally agree with you, Jones. Fans, I understand it's the playoffs, and I will say this: these wild card games, you gotta love them because, again, it's a one game elimination for you to move on and actually play in a set series. It's fun to watch because everything is on the line, and the fans just lost it, you know, last night. I mean, you got to be smarter than that. Gotta be smarter than that, okay? But hey, Blue Jays pull out that dub 5-2 and will now move on. As I mentioned in our headliners, they will now play the Rangers. Crazy, right? I mean, that could have been the Tigers. Could have been the Tigers in that position. You know, Toronto instead moves on to the ALDS. And the Tigers are certainly still in the headliners right now because as of this morning, official confirmation from many sources are saying that Brad Ausmus, manager of the Detroit Tigers, will return for at least a fourth season. Mixed emotions there, coming from the minds of many Detroit Tigers fans out there. If you look at this past year, Ausmus led the Tigers to an 86-75 record. They fell to clinch at least a wild card berth. It depends on how you look at it, though. It depends on the lens in which you look at this, because many people will sit up there and say, okay, the Tigers didn't make the playoffs, but look at all of the injuries, all of the ups and downs that the Tigers had to go through this year. And many people will praise Brad Ausmus for the managerial job that he did to even put the Tigers in contention for an American League wild card spot. The Tigers finished 2.5 games out of a wild card berth. And the news of Brad Ausmus returning is a catch-22, if you ask me. My opinion, I'm curious to get your thoughts on this. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. First off, I want to let this be known. Brad Ausmus is not the man that is going to lead the Detroit Tigers to a World Series. Let's just admit that. I mean, this is a guy who previously, before the Detroit Tigers, had no managerial experience. He came into a situation where the expectations were immense, just the highest of high expectations that you can have as a manager. Tigers fans expected, and still expect, the Detroit Tigers to go to a World Series every single year. After 2012, you know, when they got a taste of that, going to the World Series and then losing like they did against the San Francisco Giants, this team has had expectations of getting to a World Series and winning a World Series. And after Jim Leland, you bring in a young stud in Brad Ausmus to try and lead you to the promised land. He got to the playoffs in his first year. Second year was very head-scratching. And now this year, I must say, it was remarkable that Brad even had this team treading water to even have the conversation of a possible wild card berth. But let's be real here. Brad Ausmus is not going to be – there's going to be growing pains. There's still growing pains with Brad Ausmus being such a young manager like he is. Without a doubt, folks, we've seen those growing pains play out in the last 3 years. Brad Ausmus, if you want this team to immediately go to a World Series, let's be real, Brad is not the guy. But then you have to think about this. If he's not the guy, who is? Who is out there on the market right now that can legitimately lead the Detroit Tigers to a World Series? I'll wait, folks. And I saw this in the paper yesterday. Drew Sharp, the Detroit Free Press, even threw out, you know, because right now, you know, Mike Socia, manager of the Los Angeles Angels, I mean, he's on the hot seat right now. There's mixed reports coming out. Maybe he returns for another year in 2017 for the squad. But, you know, Drew threw out, you know, if the Angels decide to let him go, maybe you let go of Brad Ausmus and go after him. Logical. But what other names, what names are out there on the market right now on October 5th? What names are out there that you would be greatly intrigued by? Because I'm not seeing any. Simple as that. You know, it's a logical, this decision to bring back Brad Ausmus is a logical one. It is a logical one when you really look at it, folks. There are few better options available at the moment in present day time, and deciding to jump to a new manager for the sake of just doing it, for the sake of change, just because you believe Brad isn't the right guy, that's pretty risky. That's very risky if you ask me. Okay? To change your manager just to change your manager doesn't make sense. If there is no one out there, why do it? Why jump the gun? So it's interesting. And, you know, you talk about Detroit Tigers fans. I want to get this off my chest, too, because this thought has been brewing for quite some time on my mind. You know, I think back to Jim Leland, right? Jim Leland, you know, love him or hate him, he was a certainly intriguing figure when he was the Detroit Tigers manager. I mean, how many times did we see Jim give us one-word answers to the media after a loss? And you know, he was just a vibrant personality. You know, there were times, and he was a teddy bear as well. I mean, when the Tigers, you know, when they went to the World Series, I mean, we all remember the scenes of Jim crying and talking about how much he loves his players. I mean, he was certainly a guy. It kind of reminds me of Tom Izzo because he's so fiery, but, you know, in moments, in big moments, you know, of accomplishment, you know, he just melts down like chocolate in the hot sun. I love it. I used to love Jim Leland when he was the manager of the Detroit Tigers. I mean, and many fans did because he wore his emotions on his sleeve. And he was very fiery. And he told it like it is, right? And then you bring in a young guy who's unproven, who is, to steal a line from my favorite sports anchor of all time, Stuart Scott, he's cooler than the other side of the pillow. Maybe too cool at that. Too cool, calm, and collected after big losses, right? Doesn't show a lot of emotion. And a lot of Tigers fans don't like that because they can't read Brad Ausmus. And I've gone on the record of saying, I don't know if I like it either, because at a certain point, you know, when the Tigers have had so many ups and downs these past 2 years, I mean, at some point you got to go off. At some point you have to reach a boiling point. But that isn't Brad Ausmus's personality. And I think it's a bit unfair to expect him to show that Jim Leland-esque emotion when he isn't built like that. The dude just isn't built like that. So for me, is Brad Ausmus at his overall record of 250 and 232 in 3 years as the head guy of the Detroit Tigers, is he the guy that's going to lead you to the promised land? No. But who is? That's really the question for me. So as you see, as I go through this rant, I'm a bit conflicted here. I truly am, because I'm not a big Brad Ausmus guy. I'm not a big fan of his. When he got hired, I must admit, I did kind of buy into the hype, just like many of us did. I mean, you know, he seems like he knows the game pretty well. He's young. He's ready to get at it. But we forgot about the growing pains that naturally have to come when you put a guy in that position and expect him to bring you gold. I don't know. I don't know. Al Avila, certainly you trust him. If you remember, Avila was the assistant GM when Dave Dombrowski replaced Leland with Ausmus. It's Avila's guy. You mentioned the players here. I mean, the players love playing for Brad Ausmus. They really do. You know, you hear the different quotes that come out concerning Brad Ausmus and concerning his managerial ability. I want to read a quote from Ian Kinsler, second baseman. This comes from the Freep. Quote, "I think he's done a fine job being manager. He's only in his third year. I think there's still a lot that needs to be learned when you're in your third year of a job, and he continues to get better every year. So I think that's just natural in any job that you've never done before. So as long as he keeps getting better, I don't see why he can't manage a major league team," end quote. This all, Detroit Tigers fans, this all comes down to your expectations for the team. It really does, folks. I think it was a bit unfair to expect a young Brad Ausmus to lead you to a World Series championship when he previously had no managerial experience. I think Detroit Tigers fans, with Brad Ausmus coming back next year, you have to temper those expectations a bit. All right? And there's so many questions. I mean, not even just talking about Brad Ausmus here. He's going to be the guy next year, okay? Get comfortable with that thought. Let that thought marinate for a little bit, all right? But you look at all the other questions surrounding the Detroit Tigers right now. The payroll, first off. I mean, we're talking about $200 million here, you know? And you look at the bloated payroll. The Tigers, in my opinion, have very little to trim. Let's look at a few numbers here. Miguel Cabrera, $28 million in 2017. JV, Justin Verlander, who his name has been thrown around in Cy Young contention in these last few days. And JV had a great year. $28 million. Miggy and JV aren't going anywhere. Let's be real there. The Tigers just signed Justin Upton at $22 million. Jordan Zimmerman, who had injury troubles throughout this year. High expectations for Jay Zim coming into this year, right? He was supposed to really help that starting pitching rotation, but he couldn't stay healthy. $18 million. Those names, Upton, Jay-Z, Miggy, and JV, they're not going anywhere. And then you talk about what guys can you ship around to try and open up things a bit? You know, Anibal Sanchez, $16.8 million. Mike Pelfrey at $8 million. Mark Lowe at $5.5 million. Are there going to be any teams out there that are interested in those three? V-Mart, Victor Martinez, he sits at $18 million. You know, maybe he shipped around a bit to see what you can get for him and try to lighten that $200 million load. There's going to be a lot of guys out there, you know, vying for Ian Kinsler, I think. $11 million, a lot of teams out there, I think. But, you know, then you got to look at, okay, you got to replace a second baseman there. So there's so many questions with the payroll. You look at Cameron Maybin, who had a fantastic year. Now, Cameron couldn't stay healthy, at least to start the year. But Cameron Maybin had his best offensive season of his career. Fantastic. Only 94 games, though. You know, you can keep Maybin at $9 million or see what you can get for him. I don't know. Francisco Rodriguez, he's no spring chicken. 35 years old. 35 years old in 2017. He was solid, a solid closer for the Tigers. But can he keep that up as he gets older now? I don't know. So as you see, there's so many questions. So this isn't just a question if Brad Ausmus is the right guy, but managerially, you know, in the upper echelons, how do you manage this payroll? Because I really think that Mike Ilitch, he's got a ton of questions to consider this offseason. So this goes beyond Brad Ausmus, in my opinion. It really does, folks. What do you think? 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Before we hit our first break, I want to invite to the show our engineer of WKAR's current sports, Isaac Constance. Isaac, you can see, as I just laid out everything here, there's you can get kind of overwhelmed by all the questions surrounding the Tigers now, what moves to make, what guys to ship out, how do you deal with that $200 million cap? I mean, that's a lot of money, first off. And then you consider that Brad Ausmus is coming back. I don't think he's the guy, but who do you replace with him? I mean, a lot of questions here, but I do think that considering the circumstances right now and looking at the lay of the landscape, I really think that Al Avila was forced to bring Brad back.
Yeah, I agree. I think you detailed it very intricately and properly as well, addressing the issue, because in the words of G-Eazy, you can walk away, but you won't find nothing better.
Right.
And that's
the
thing. That is the current situation of the Tigers with Brad Ausmus. The other fold that I bring to this conversation is, at least me personally, I was not sold on Brad Ausmus at first. Heck, I'm not sold on Brad Ausmus now. But the thing is, and I think it's indisputable, actually, that Brad Ausmus has improved as a manager as he's gone along.
I agree.
He didn't make the stupid rookie managerial mistakes he did his first year in charge or his second year in charge. I said before in this season, and you and I had, I think, our longest argument ever over the meaning of a word when I said he did a masterful job at times this season with the pitching rotation, which I hold true to, but
I wouldn't go that far. Now, let's not get in that debate again.
Not again.
If you want to catch that
let's bury it.
Go to WKR.org and find it, okay?
Yeah, we've got a special tag for Al Martin versus Isaac Constance on the website. But
I like that.
Anyway, no, Brad Ausmus has definitely improved as a manager. He's got a lot of improvement to go, but that's the thing. And when you mention names who also would have been contentions for this managerial spot, had Ausmus parted ways with the Tigers, or rather it would have been the other way, of course. But Robin Ventura of the White Sox will have been thrown out there, I think. He's below 500 as a manager. Mm-hmm. Decent manager, I think. Actually, I think good manager. I think he would have been fine. But also not a World Series winner. Then you've got Bud Black, the former manager of the San Diego Padres. Mm-hmm. Again, below 500. Not a World Series winner. So you might as well stick with the guy who has room to grow, some potential in terms of running with the team. And I think Ausmus does have that potential. The problem with the Tigers is they need it right now. Mm-hmm. Because this team is aging. They're growing older. And the fact is they're injury prone year after year. So they need to have this closing window extended a little bit. Brad Ausmus might be able to do that. But more than anything else, they need to jump right through it. They need to capitalize on it right now. So we'll see, but I'm with you in that I don't think there's necessarily anything better out there right now except for a better bullpen, which is all the Tigers, I think, need to focus on right now.
Yeah, I think that right now for the Tigers, if there – it'll be a different argument if there was somebody out there that I think, okay – or a few names out there that I think, okay, could really come in and make an immediate impact on this team. But right now, there just isn't. So you gotta play the cards you dealt. You got to turn lemons into lemonade. I can go on and on here. But so when you look at this team – there's so many other questions than just Brad Ausmus. You know what I mean? And at a certain point, again, going back to my point that I bring up all the time here on the show, at some point, the players have to go out there and do and get the job done. And that hasn't been the case these last 3 years that when Brad Ausmus has been, you know, the head man in charge as well. At some point, you have to start putting a lot of the blame on the players as well, folks. And they got to stay healthy. Got to stay healthy. That's what's killed the Tigers so much this year. Because just imagine, if they had a healthy roster, Isaac, I think the Tigers will be in our headliners right now competing in the playoffs for at least the next few weeks.
Oh, I don't think that they necessarily even have been competing last night. I think they might have even beat out the Cleveland Indians, because J.D. Martinez, look at the infusion of life that he brought to this team. And then Nick Castellanos, the unsung hero of the Detroit Tigers, when he went out, it was almost a like-for-like trade with J.D. Martinez. Castellanos was having a career year. When he went out, the Tigers lost a valuable hitter, and at the same time, one of the best fielders on the team at one of the most important fielding positions. So the Tigers, they need to find a way to stay healthy. At the same time, they need to go into free agency, like you said, with an open mind that maybe we need to sell a few players in exchange for roster depth. Because that's
certainly
what the Tigers need.
I agree. And as you mentioned, that window is closing, folks. That window to win a World Series is closing, and closing quickly. I mean, next year may be it. Maybe that's the final opportunity for this team to legitimately have a shot at a World Series. I want to mention the eight pitchers who started in the final months of the year. All will be back in 2017. You can rest assured of this. JV, Michael Fulmer, who had a heck of a rookie campaign. Hats off to Michael Fulmer. Jordan Zimmermann, Daniel Norris, Matt Boyd, Anibal Sanchez, Mike Pelfrey, and Buck Farmer. I think all of those guys return next season. Let's hit our first break. When we come back, we will bring to you an awesome feature brought to you by our very own Scott Pohl. He got a chance to chat with the wife of Irvin Magic Johnson, Cookie Johnson, and she has a new book out, folks. Don't miss that chat. We'll be right back.
Around and act like I don't care. So when you see me flying by the planet's moon, you don't need to explain if everything's changed. Just know I'm just like you.
Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. Irvin Magic Johnson is probably the biggest thing ever to come out of Lansing. He led Michigan State to the NCAA basketball title back in 1979 before playing five NBA championships with the LA Lakers. His career and his life took a major turn in 1991 when he was diagnosed with HIV. The virus associated with AIDS. Now, his wife, Cookie, has written a book about the 25 years since that dramatic turn. The book is called Believing in Magic, My Story of Love, Overcoming Adversity, and Keeping the Faith. She talked with WKAR's Scott Pohl about how their family is doing today and the day Irvin told her of his diagnosis. But Cookie Johnson started the conversation by looking back at meeting Irvin Johnson when they both were just freshmen here at Michigan State University.
We did, yeah. And it's really funny because, you know, I tell a funny story in my book that my high school boyfriend at the time, when I was applying for Michigan State, he saw that I was filling out the application, and he said, what application is that for? And I said, Michigan State. And he said, you can't go to Michigan State. And I said, why? And he said, because you're going to meet that magic guy. And I'm like, what?
Who's he?
It was really funny because I had no idea who he was talking about at the time. But my high school boyfriend used to play, you know, basketball in high school, so I guess he probably knew Irvin and followed him or something. And then it was like weeks later, the sports section of the Detroit News did a story on him that he chose Michigan State, and, you know, it was a big deal. He was going to go there. And that was the first time I saw him and saw a picture to know who he was and who this guy was that my boyfriend was talking about. But it's just really funny because, you know, soon after we broke up, before I even got to Michigan State, but I just thought that was a really funny story. But, yeah, we went out one night. I was with a girlfriend, and she introduced him to me. And then that entire night, he never said a word to me, never said anything other than hello. And then afterwards, when the lights were up, we were going home, he decides to, I look over to him and say goodbye, and that's when he said, oh, hey, let me get that number. Okay, no, because we're going to be going home for Christmas. You're not going to, you know, you won't be back for a month, and you'll never remember me. But we started laughing. I gave him the number anyway, and that's how we started. When, as soon as I got back for Christmas, he called.
Pretty much as you were walking back into your room is when he called you.
You know, I came back a few days early because I needed to, as any of you Michigan State people know, you Spartans, you know that when you don't have all your classes and it's time to register, we used to have to hit the pits.
Right.
Back then, it was the most horrible thing in the world to go there and try to pick up classes. but anyway, I came in early to do that, and he called. And I was shocked. I'm like, how did he know, you know? And he never told me until probably recently that he had been calling all along, and he just got lucky when I picked up the phone.
Sometimes you hear celebrities say that what drew them to their partner or spouse was that they found someone who convinced them that they weren't attracted by the celebrity. What has Irvin said about what drew him to you in those days?
Yeah, I think it was because, you know, when we met, I mean, he was, if you remember, he was a freshman. We were freshmen. So he was just proving himself to the world. You know, he had had the nickname, but he had to, at that time, he was proving good to the nickname, if that makes any sense. Like, everybody was trying to see, is he really magic? Was he really magic, or was this all hype? So when I met him, he was in that mode. You know, he was playing his heart out. He was trying to, you know, he had to live up to that name that they gave him, and that no one really knew if he really had the potential to do that. So when we met, you know, it was like I met Irvin. I didn't meet really magic. You know, he was really just becoming the essence of magic. And because of that, I think our relationship was very grounded, meaning, you know, we met like that on a level where it was just Cookie and Irvin. It wasn't Cookie and Magic. And that's kind of how we started it. And I think because we had a good foundation like that, it, even though we went on and broke up several times, I think he kept coming back to me because I reminded him of home. I reminded him of being grounded and of being who he, you know, truly was.
Yeah, you were on and off for more than a decade before you finally got married.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It took us 12 years to get married. A little over 12 years, and we had two 4-year breakups. You know, we broke up after 4 years and then, you know, stayed apart for 4 years and then we got back together. Then we got engaged. Then we broke up again for another 4 years, you know. So, it's interesting because I always say I think that God, that was our destiny and God wanted us together because I have any idea how we kept getting back together. Because for me, each time it's like, okay, that's it. I'm done. But somehow we would always end up back, you know, and always started off as a friendship and then slowly working ourselves back to dating. And I think that that's part of why our relationship is so strong because we did, over those years, develop a really good friendship. And we always say that we are each other's best friend.
So you got married in 1991, is that right?
Correct.
And it did not take long. Within a month or two, he was already a big NBA star, national NBA championships
Oh, yeah.
and so on.
Yeah.
And within a month or two, he gets his HIV diagnosis. You tell the story of hearing the news from him in your book. I wanted to make sure you had a moment to share that story with our listeners, though.
Yeah, that day, it was a very, you know, dark day for me. I just felt like, you know, the whole world had crashed. And when you think about the journey of the 12 years of, you know, trying to get married and everything we went through, and then finally, here we are, we're married, we're happy. I just found out I was pregnant like 2 weeks ago, 2 weeks before that, and boom, it hit. I was home, and I was sitting with a friend about to sit down and watch the basketball game because he was, I believe, in Utah about to play. And the phone rang. And as the phone rang, I'm looking at the TV, and it's him. And I'm going, wait, you should be, you know, walking on the court right now. And he said, yeah, I know, but I had to come home, and I'll tell you why when I get there. So I had to wait all those hours for him to get home to tell me what it was. And so for me, that wait was agonizing. I had no idea what was going on. So many different things went through my head. I kept saying, oh, my God, I think he wants a divorce, because we had just gotten married, you know, and he had so many times, you know, backed out of it. So even though we had just gotten married, I'm like, oh, God, is he going to back out again? What's going on, you know? So everything went through my head. Finally, he gets there. He walks in the door, and he said, I'm not going to be around the bush. I have to tell you. And I was like, oh, my God, what could it be? You know, I joked, you know, like, it was AIDS or something, you know, what? It couldn't be, like, anything this crazy. And he goes, yeah, I have just been diagnosed with the HIV virus that causes AIDS. And my heart just hit the floor. And it was really, I was scared. You know, I was hurt, you know, sad. And I was so shocked. I didn't even say anything. I just kept staring at him like, what? This can't be real. But then he said, you have to go to the doctor and get tested yourself. And I said, oh, my God. I didn't think about myself. What about, oh, my God, me? And then I said, what about my baby? And that scared us more, both of us, more than anything. At that point is when he said, well, if you don't want to stay, I understand. I totally understand. You don't have to stay with me. And I said, no, you're crazy. I hit him, and I said, I love you. I'm here to stay. And, you know, for me, I just felt that regardless of whatever happened, you know, what happened before or how we got to that point, there were two things that were facing me that day, that moment. And that is, when you heard in 1991 of somebody getting AIDS, you thought death.
Right.
You knew it was a death sentence, you know? And that's the only thing that I kept crossing my mind. That was the only thing that I couldn't stop thinking about. And so I said, no way, you know, because I felt if I left him, he would have died. And I'm not going to do that to him. I'm going to stay, and I choose to stay and help him live and, you know, and keep our family together. And so from that day forward, we prayed, and that's where I gained my strength, you know, to go forward, is I leaned on the Lord and, you know, asked the Lord to help us. And then the next day we went to the doctor to find out what was going on.
And in those days, it took more than a week to get your own diagnosis regarding HIV.
Yes. It took almost 2 weeks, yes. Again, another period of agonizing, you know, pain, like not knowing, you know, what was going on. And he was more upset than I was, because he just did not want either one of us to have it, you know, me and the baby. And it took everything to push negative thoughts out of my mind. But every morning I woke up going, oh, my God, what if we die? You know, and you had to just find a way to push it out. And I would just go to the Bible and read something positive and read a scripture that says, you know, like the one that I always went to was, no weapons formed against me shall prosper. You know, and I would always just say that over and over to myself to throw out all those negative thoughts that were coming in, until I'm like, you have to stay patient. You have to stay, you know, calm until we at least know what the results are. And so that was really very difficult. So then we did go to the doctor, found out that I was negative. And if the mother is negative, then the baby's automatically negative. And so that was the good news for us. And then at that point, we both decided, let's educate ourselves, find out everything we need to know about this disease so that we can figure out how to beat it. And that's what we did, you know, and that's why we had a conversation with Elizabeth Glazier, who was a big AIDS advocate. She had actually gotten the disease from a blood transfusion, but she had started her own foundation, and she was doing, you know, great things with it. And we decided to go talk to her and see, because we really wanted to talk to somebody that, you know, was in a similar situation. And it was such a wonderful thing to do that, because she was such a strong, mighty little lady, just a tiny little lady, but strong. And, you know, the first thing she said is, listen, Don't feel sorry for yourself. You got to get out there and fight. And you need to make an announcement. You need to, you know, save as many people as possible, because people do not realize there are other people in this world. There are heterosexuals in this world that have this disease. It's not just a gay disease. This is a disease that affects everyone. And we need to educate the world about this. And from that day on, that was our mission.
Cookie Johnson is the author of Believing in Magic, My Story of Love, Overcoming Adversity, and Keeping the Faith. For the first time, she's writing and talking about her marriage to Lansing native and basketball legend Irvin Magic Johnson. Cookie, I wanted to ask you about the press conference, that remarkable announcement when Magic told the world that he was HIV positive and retiring from the NBA.
Because of the HIV virus that I have attained, I will have to retire from the Lakers today. I just want to make clear, first of all, that I do not have the AIDS disease, because I know a lot of you want to know that, but the HIV virus. My wife is fine. She's negative, so no problem with her.
You were at that press conference, and lots of times at a time like that, when a man has a press conference to announce something that a lot of people will make a negative connotation to his personal life, people sometimes criticize the woman for being there too, standing by her man, so to speak. Did you have any hesitation about being with him at that press conference?
Yes. When he told me that he was going to do that, I tried to talk him out of it. I kept saying, you know, it's one thing that, you know, we're dealing with this, but it's another thing that the world has to, you know at the same time, because of the stigma that was out there at that time. You know, people at that time thought you couldn't touch anyone. They thought you couldn't hug anyone. You know, you couldn't be near anyone that had the disease. I was worried that people were going to treat us like lepers and that they wouldn't, you know, accept us. And so when he told me he was going to do that, it really upset me. I kept begging him not to do it. And then one day I was, you know, I was praying about it, and Irvin turned to me and he said, listen, this isn't about me. It's not about you. This is about saving as many people as we possibly can. This is why I have to do it. And then it just dawned on me that, you know, this was his purpose. You know, this was God's purpose for him to be out there and to be the face of this disease and to try to save as many people as possible. And then my purpose was to be there to support him. And no, I wasn't happy with it at first, but once we did it, I got it. I understood this is what needed to be done.
Cookie Johnson, tell us when you started to believe that Magic really would survive, that he would not develop AIDS, that he would be as healthy as he is today, 25 years later. When did you start thinking that way?
You know what? I had to start thinking that way every day. And I have to tell you, in the beginning, thoughts kept creeping in, like, you know, you're in denial. You know, this is not true. Look at him. He's taking his medicine. But I threw, every time that happened, I would throw that out of my head. I put one of those scriptures in my mind, and I would go forward. That's how I did it. And then I just took it each day at a time. Sometimes it had to be one moment at a time, and I just had to breathe through the moment. You know what I mean? Because sometimes, as a human being, you do get overwhelmed with these thoughts of, you're just crazy, you know, this isn't going to happen. But I had to develop a true trust for God. And once I did, you know, that was probably maybe like after EJ was born and it got deeper. And then even after the situation with EJ, I had to go even deeper into the Word to find peace about my son. You know, it just continues to grow. I continue to search the Word. I continue to grow as a Christian, and I continue. My biggest thing that I did, I think, is the most important thing. I continue to seek a one-on-one relationship with God. And how do you do that? And once I developed that, then I knew that God was going to be there for us, and He would never leave us.
We see Irvin Johnson from time to time. He seems to be doing just great. You sound like you're doing just great. How are your children doing?
My children are doing great. We are all wonderful. You know, our oldest son, Andre, he's married. He's got two kids. We have wonderful grandkids, and we just, you know, that's who we spend a lot of time with, and we just love them to death. EJ's doing well. He's on the reality shows, but he's, you know, carving out his own entertainment career, and he's doing really well. And Aliza's come along. She says she's still in school. She's in the fashion at the FIT in New York. I think she's going to do something big in fashion one day, so look for her. Takes after mom. So she's in New York going to school. So everybody's doing amazing. Of course, my husband, he's wonderful. And I have to tell you, he's healthy. He's strong, you know, and I just praise God for that because he has never been sick a day since that announcement, you know, other than maybe having a little stomach ache from the first medication. But other than that, he is, you know, amazing. And so we're all doing wonderful. Thank you for asking.
Well, it seems from afar that Irvin Magic Johnson is lucky to have had you by his side all these years.
Aw, thank you.
Cookie Johnson's new book is Believing in Magic, My Story of Love, Overcoming Adversity, and Keeping the Faith. She and her husband, Irvin Magic Johnson, have been married for 25 years now, and the book recounts her story about life with the Lansing, MSU, and NBA basketball star. Cookie Johnson, thank you.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. And go green!
Go white!
Oh, boy. Much thanks to our very own Scott Pohl for bringing that interview to Current Sports this afternoon. That was dynamite. I mean, my goodness. And it takes a lot of strength. I remember, you know, because people play that press conference all the time with Magic when he addressed the public for the first time, announcing that he had attained the HIV virus. And you see Cookie Johnson there. So much strength during that moment. I definitely got to get that book. I want to pick that up and definitely peruse through that. Thanks so much, Scott. Appreciate that. All right. Our second break, when we come back, we will put a bow on today's Current Sports by talking about a troubled wide receiver who plays for the New York Giants. That's right. Odell Beckham Jr. is dominating the headlines today. We'll tell you why. You are listening to WKAR's Current Sports. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. If you're just now joining us, I feel bad for you. Only 5 minutes left. But hey, you know that around 3 o'clock each and every weekday, we post that afternoon's version of the show. So if you missed it, just simply go to WKAR.org later on and listen to all of the chatter we had on our airwaves, including Brad Ausmus coming back as the Detroit Tigers manager for next year, as well as that fantastic interview between Cookie Johnson, the wife of NBA Hall of Famer Irvin Magic Johnson, and our very own Scott Pohl. That was a fantastic interview. We will close out today's show by talking about Odell Beckham Jr., one of the NFL's most compelling figures, one of the best wide receivers in the game. He's been the center of attention lately due to his on-the-field, really just, I don't know if, what you can call it, temper tantrums. I think that's the best way I can describe it. Odell Beckham Jr. in the last 2 weeks, he has really been frustrated and has taken it out on I think, what do you call it, the kicker's net? Did you see that, Isaac? He
good of a guess as I've got. Yeah kicker's net.
Yeah, the kicker's net where, you know, 2 weeks ago he just was frustrated and kind of just took it out on the kicker's net with his helmet, and the kicker's net fought back and hit him right in the head.
It won 12 rounds, but by mutual decision, unanimous decision, yeah, of the judges, the kicker's net did win.
The kicker's net did win, I think. And this past weekend, on Monday Night Football, Odell was also, he got flagged and penalized for taunting after just popping off at the mouth. And former NFL coach Tom Coughlin, he's in the headlines today as well, because he said he is willing to help Odell Beckham Jr., and the NFL is also trying to do its part to ease the New York Giants wide receivers' frustrations. This is coming via ESPN. Beckham told ESPN on Tuesday that he is frustrated with the amount of attention on his behavior during games and says that he is, quote, not having fun anymore. Playing, of course, the game of football, Coughlin, who coached the Giants from 04 to 2015, he told the CBS Sports Network on Tuesday, quote, for his own good, he needs to learn to channel his passion. And I would love to try and help him in this regard because I think so highly of him. He is a distraction. If you watch a game, the camera is on him the whole time, end quote. Yeah, Beckham had his career worst 23 receiving yards on just 3 catches against the Minnesota Vikings on Monday Night Football. He was also flagged for, again, as I mentioned, that taunting penalty. And he repeatedly clashed with Vikings corner Xavier Rhodes just 1 week after his latest confrontation with outspoken corner Josh Norman. Isaac, you have an interesting tie with Mr. Odell Beckham Jr. Would you like to share that on our airwaves really briefly?
Would love to. So this is a situation of much ambivalence and vacillation for me because I grew
love
up.
The word, first pause. These words you throw out, Isaac, are great. We need to create your own segment called
montage.
Isaac's Word of the Day or something.
Vocabulary bendness.
I think those two words just flew over our listeners' heads, but go ahead.
But no, anyway, Odell and I grew up together, actually, in Uptown New Orleans. I was actually on his football team in middle school and chess club where he won third, I won first. But anyway, Odell and I grew up together, one of the nicest kids you ever met. And I'll share this. This is a little bit embarrassing. He's 3 years older than I was. But actually, I had Madden 02 and I created a My Player account with Odell Beckham Jr. as the name. 99 overall running back and not too far off by my approximation. So anyway, though, I really looked up to the guy. He was a great kid. Always was humble, always was loyal to his team. So I've got to say, now I'm a Josh Norman fan because he needs the humility ingrained in him more than ever. He has totally abandoned who he was as a kid. And I think it's time that, in the words of our good caller, Ray from Indiana,
you can humble yourself.
Yeah, honestly, that's why I think it is right now. Too much of a talent to be wasted, if you ask me.
I have a bit of a different take, which I'll share on tomorrow's show, seeing as though we only have 30 seconds left on the show. But I'm going to go a different route. But I'm kind of on the same page with you. We'll get to that on tomorrow's show. But Odell Beckham Jr., certainly a troubled young man right now. Yeah, I really wish I could go on that rant right now, but we're just out of time. All right, folks. But yeah, I thought it was high school. So it is. It's middle school you guys went to
middle
school together.
School, yeah.
Middle school, okay. All right, folks. Well, thanks so much to all of you out there for tuning in to this edition of Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. We'll chat with you tomorrow. Have a great day and be easy, people.